The Senate Judiciary and Public Safety Committee will come to order. For the record, this date is March 17th, 2011. We have a full order of things to do today. We have two bills. We'll be starting with Senate File 695, Senator Fischbach, and then we'll be followed by Senator Ingebrigtsen, and then followed by budget recommendations from the chair of this committee.
Well, thank you very much, Mr.
Welcome
Chair.
Welcome to the committee, Senator Fischbach.
Thank you. Senate File 695, you know, basically makes human cloning unlawful in the state of Minnesota. And the first section defines human cloning and explains the prohibition. Then on to Subdivision 5 on page 2, and that clarifies what procedures are included, are addressed in the prohibition. Subdivision 6 explains the penalties. And there have been I don't know if you have the engrossed copy or not, but there was a change, and then we have an additional amendment that will address some of those penalties. And then finally, there's a severability clause included in the language. In the Health Committee, we did change the felony to a misdemeanor. Now, I understand that we've been working on an amendment that would clean up that language even further and take out the penalty and then add a little bit of language for clarity's sake. So I do have Andrea Rao with MCCL here to explain the amendment a little better since they've been working on the technicalities of that for us.
Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Mr. Chair, members of the committee, my name is Andrea Rao. I work with Minnesota Citizens Concerned for Life, a grassroots organization of more than 70,000 member families and over 240 chapters across the state of Minnesota. The amendment, as Senator Fischbach stated as well, is largely recommendations from Senate Council, as well as a change to the penalties section. There used to be kind of some tiered penalties, if you will, with different penalties depending on exactly which portion of the bill was violated. This makes it so that any violation of the prohibitions contained within this bill would be a misdemeanor, regardless of what they are. As well, it adds a sentence that was brought up in the Health and Human Services Committee earlier this week. There were some concerns that more research other than just cloning would be included in the prohibition here, and so there was a sentence added specifying that no stem cell research other than specifically what is prohibited in this, meaning cloning, is related to this language.
Thank you. Further testimony? No further testimony?
Not from us. And
are there any questions for the author or the testifier?
Senator Letts.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I was in the Health and Human Services Committee on this the other night, and we did not have anyone from the U there, and I believe that somebody from the U is here today. I wonder if we will be able to hear from them in a minute or two. I don't need it right now, but I would like to have a person from the U. There was nobody here on the other evening in Health and Human Services, and I believe there is somebody from the U here now, and I would like to hear them at the appropriate time.
Yeah. Thank you, Senator Marty. We will be asking for anyone with an opinion on this bill to come forward for testimony. If the committee would like, since there's not a robust need for questions right now, if there's anyone opposed to this bill, would you please come to the table? And let the record show we do have a quorum. Yes, please come to the table. And would you identify yourself for the record?
My name is John Wagner. I'm a professor of pediatrics in the blood and marrow transplant program and the director of the Stem Cell Institute for clinical research at the University of Minnesota.
Please proceed. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. From the outset, let me be clear that I believe that stem cell therapies will revolutionize the practice of medicine. The proof of principle already exists because I've done it. For the first time, we'll have new treatments that will have lasting effects in patients with stroke, spinal cord injury, diabetes, cancer, and so on. It is not a question of whether this new knowledge will translate into useful clinical treatments, but rather when for each of these diseases. Stem cell research must continue to take place in academic institutions like the University of Minnesota, supported by federal dollars with guaranteed oversight, peer review, and above all, transparency. Right now, there is only one proven use for stem cells, and that is in the context of blood marrow transplantation to treat diseases like leukemia, lymphoma, and other cancers, as well as aplastic anemia, and so on. What you do in that state is you actually infuse stem cells from bone marrow or umbilical cord blood, for example, to repair the diseased or damaged bone marrow in that patient after receiving high doses of chemotherapy and radiation. And on that note, I fully expect in the not-too-distant future to be called to Japan to address some of the injuries that are being taking place for those who are exposed to high doses of radiation after the recent accidents. But also know the tremendous achievements have been made in stem cell biology. I know this because I treat children with incurable diseases, or what we previously considered to be incurable diseases. And we've changed the practice again and again and again. While my own work is focused on stem cell therapies from cord blood and adult tissues, perhaps surprisingly not on embryonic stem cells, I'm here to defend the need for embryonic stem cell research, which is supported in, by most every demographic in the state and the United States as a whole. It needs to be clear that this bill could interfere with this work as currently written. The University of Minnesota is well known in the field of stem cell research, and much of that work in stem cells has been pioneered here. Speaking as a clinical investigator who creates and tests new stem cell therapies in humans, each new stem cell treatment will come with significant risk, but also with significant hope. This past year, we performed the first stem cell infusions for a treatment of a rare skin disease called epidermolysis bullosa, where in Europe, in certain countries, these children are euthanized because of the severity of this disease at birth. But our dramatic results in the cure of these children with stem cells resulted in a publication in the New England Journal of Medicine this past August and changed the practice of medicine. As we meet all the requirements of the University of Minnesota, from human subjects committees, ethics committees, embryonic stem cell oversight committees, as well as the Food and Drug Administration, we move this research forward responsibly, clearly with tremendous oversight. Yet this bill is written with the intent of limiting our ability to do these therapies, and there are a few scenarios. Somatic cell nuclear transfer, with the intent of making an embryonic stem cell line, not a baby, but a stem cell line, could interfere in patient-specific treatments. This will be banned. Such embryonic stem cell lines or its derivative therapies originally developed in another country or another state will be banned from ever reaching this state, preventing me from using these discoveries that could benefit people with diseases or industries. Patients who are treated elsewhere with such embryonic stem cell lines developed by somatic cell nuclear transfer will not be able to return to this state without risk of being charged with a crime. Today, we need to separate reproductive cloning, which we all agree should be banned, from nuclear transfer, which is performed solely to develop patient-specific cells, stem cells. As someone who finds cures for incurable diseases and as one of the leaders in translating stem cell therapies into meaningful treatments, you need to know the potential consequences of the legislation as currently written. This legislation will ban more than reproductive cloning. Know what you are voting on. The intent is clear to interfere with the promise of embryonic stem cell research as we envision it. Every single one of us will be faced with a disease amenable to stem cell therapy. It may be our child, it may be our spouse, our friend, or even ourselves. But as a clinician who treats these patients, I am here as a voice on the behalf of them. For them, the stakes are simply unimaginable. Thank you.
Thank you, Dr. Wagner. Any other person wishing to testify on this bill? Senator Fischbach?
I believe, Mr. Chair, that Ms. Rao has something else she'd like to add.
Ms. Rao.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I had actually prepared some testimony, but as we, it's fairly similar to the testimony that I had provided in the Health and Human Services Committee on Monday, or excuse me, on Tuesday. But considering we do have testimony from the other side here today, if the committee would appreciate it, I would like to provide that as well.
By all means.
Thank you. I am here today to urge you to pass Senate File 695, the Human Cloning Prohibition Act. In 2009, Minnesota passed a two-year prohibition on state funding of human cloning. Therefore, the state has already made clear that it does not support or encourage human cloning. This bill takes the next logical step and prohibits cloning altogether, not just the funding of it for tax dollars. Everyone in this room knows what human cloning is. Maybe not the scientific terms, but the end result of the action. Simply put, human cloning is making a genetic copy of an entire human, starting with a new embryo. Now, what the doctor here was talking about is doing human cloning, creating that new embryo, but then destroying that embryo to get the stem cell lines. We believe that that is wrong. That is still human cloning. It's just human cloning with a death sentence put at the end of it, rather than allowing that clone to continue to grow and become a fully grown human being just as you and I are. Leading researchers and scientists, including Ian Wilmot, the maker of the clone Dolly the Sheep, and many others have turned against human cloning. They have found that the cloning of animals does not work very well, and other new techniques offer much more promise in providing practical applications. We believe that Minnesota ought to be at the forefront of cutting-edge research, and human cloning would move our state in the wrong direction. We would be in good company, joining a number of states and dozens of countries, including France, Germany, and Canada, in banning human cloning. The only penalty provided in this legislation is a misdemeanor, as this legislation is intended primarily to set a state policy against human cloning and to dissuade researchers in Minnesota from attempting human cloning. I urge you to listen to the vast majority of Americans who believe that human cloning is wrong and to vote today to ban human cloning in Minnesota, whether for reproductive purposes or to kill that clone for research purposes. I urge you to please support Senate File 695, and I would be happy to answer any questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Ms. Rao. Dr. Wagner?
Professor Wilmot and Professor Janus, who are both advocates of somatic cell nuclear transfer, are very much against reproductive cloning. That is indeed true. The issue that we need to make sure that we're clear on is that when they make statements that they're against cloning, they're talking about reproductive cloning and not somatic cell nuclear transfer. Because what we need to know is that it is confused in the public's eye. When we talk about a bill that says, you know, banning human cloning, of course we all ban human cloning for reproductive purposes. It needs to be differentiated what the topic really is so that, and also what other people who are experts in the field have really said. They have not banned or not against somatic cell nuclear transfer. They are against, as we all are, we are for banning of reproductive cloning for the purpose of producing a genetically identical baby or adult from your own cells. So it needs to be clear. Now, the other point I want to make is there are alternative strategies for which are being explored that will hopefully give us the same outcome, that is using induced pluripotential stem cells that may give us something quite identical to what we're currently talking about, that is a tissue-specific therapy. But that's also fraught with a variety of risks and also a variety of obstacles that yet are in our way. The gold standard by which everything is compared is the human embryonic stem cell when we talk about stem cell therapies. I say to you, as the scientist here that works on this particular topic, that it's premature to eliminate the need for such embryonic stem cell lines derived by somatic cell nuclear transfer. Hopefully, in the not-too-distant future, so that we can avoid any of these discussions, we will be able to come back to you to tell you when we are ready to do that. But at this point, it is premature, and any suggestion otherwise is ill-founded.
Thank you.
Mr. Chair, I would just like to mention
pardon
on
me, Senator Fischbach.
The university chose not to appear at the Health and Human Services Committee, and I was in contact with them after that because they were able to put out a letter and then they chose not to meet with me before this meeting. So I would have appreciated the opportunity to have this discussion prior to this, but the university chose not to.
Sir Marty.
Dr. Wagner.
Well, I mean, I can't speak on behalf of the university in particular with that statement. However, I was only made aware of this yesterday.
Right. The bill was posted properly.
Yeah. Senator Marty.
Mr. Chairman, I don't care to get into when, who knew what, and I think somebody was there during the day the other day for the hearing. What I'm interested in is Ms. Rao mentioned the public strong opposition to human cloning, which I agree, and I think there's also strong public support for stem cell research. And so, Senator Fischbach, I guess my question is, I'm willing to work on an amendment to try and limit it to banning reproductive cloning and to protect the stem cell cloning, but if that's not the intent, then I'd be wasting time trying to create an amendment. So I guess my question is, is your goal to stop the reproductive cloning, or is your goal to stop what will be the stem cell research? I guess that's what I'm trying to get at, what the goal is, because if so, I'll work on an amendment to try and address the concern about the human cloning without the stem cell research.
Mr. Chair, I don't know if the A4, but we talked a little bit about the amendment that we were offering as the A4. I believe Ms. Rao explained part of it. Lines 1-9 through 111, in addition, nothing in this section shall restrict, inhibit, or make unlawful the scientific field of stem cell research unless explicitly prohibited. We put that language in this bill or in the amendment after the discussion at Health and Human, and I did state at Health and Human I didn't think it was probably a good idea to do that kind of language on the fly at the time, and so we took the time and put together the language now, and I'm offering it. I can't offer it in this committee, but I would ask that someone add that amendment.
Let's get the motion out of the way first, Senator Murray.
I thought we already adopted the amendment, didn't we?
I don't believe we adopted
No, we haven't. To the best of my knowledge, we haven't adopted anything.
Senator Newman offers the A4 amendment.
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is a matter that was discussed in Health and Human Services last night, and I would at this time move the A4 amendment.
Discussion. Senator Murray.
Mr. Chairman, I Senator Fischbach, that language in there, nothing in this section shall restrict, inhibit, or make unlawful scientific field of stem cell research, might accomplish a good chunk of it, and then you have unless explicitly prohibited, and of course that's what the prohibitions in the rest of the bill are, which is where I suggest, like on page 1, line 17 of the actual bill, if we perform or attempt to perform human cloning for reproductive purposes. In other words, I don't think your amendment changes anything, at least not without that unless explicitly prohibited is removed from there. I'm willing to work on amendment to that, and I can't do it on the fly either, but I mean, we're wasting time if I'm trying to do it and your goal is to go further than banning it for reproductive purposes, and in effect, this language does nothing to change that the way I see it. If your intent is not to interfere with the stem cell research of the type that Dr. Wagner's talking about, I don't think this amendment changes anything. If you're not trying to restrict that research, I'm happy to work on an amendment. I'm just trying to get clarification for what the intent is.
Well, I believe Ms. Rao has something to add to this regarding some existing language.
Ms. Rao.
Existing statutory language.
Sure. Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty, I don't wish to put words in Senator Fischbach's mouth, but it is my understanding that we are, with this bill, attempting to prohibit cloning both for therapeutic and reproductive purposes because it's cloning. Whether we allow that child to develop and be born, or whether we kill it at its very early stage as an embryo, we still have created a new, unique, individual member of our human family. And we believe that that life then needs to be protected once it's created. So we do not support the creation of new human life for it explicitly to be destroyed. I would like to point out that it is also our understanding that that is already not allowed under Minnesota law. According to Minnesota statutes 145.421 and 145.422, embryonic stem cell research, or the destruction of a human conceptus specifically in Minnesota, is already prohibited. Under subdivision 1 of 145.422, it reads, whoever uses or permits the use of a living human conceptus for any type of scientific, laboratory research, or other experimentation, except to protect the life or health of the conceptus, or except as herein provided, shall be guilty of a gross misdemeanor. So we already are not allowed to destroy embryos in the state of Minnesota for research purposes.
Thank you. Sir Marty.
Madam, Mr. Chair, the law you're citing, if that would stop whatever kind of research in terms of Dr. Wagner's proposed, has said this bill would rule out, if it's already unlawful, then I don't see why you'd need this legislation. Bottom line is it's pretty clear to me that this is not to ban creation of a cloned human being. This is to stop what many people feel is very promising stem cell research for Alzheimer's, for ALS, for a whole bunch of conditions that I think we ought to be interested in doing it. And so suggesting in that new language that this is not going to restrict, inhibit, or make unlawful scientific field of stem cell research, I think that's what the intent of this bill is. I mean, that's I guess the way I'm reading it, and I'm not sure if you are interested. I'm happy to work on something to limit it to reproductive purposes, but I don't get the sense that that's the goal. And I agree, the public strongly opposes it. I oppose that. I think the public strongly supports the stem cell research, not just people with Parkinson's or ALS, but a whole bunch of people who know family members and their friends who are. I guess that's what my concern is. And I think we're pretending to talk about one thing and talking realistically, whether intentionally or not, we're having an impact on the other one.
Sir Hall.
Dr. Wagner is in?
Yes.
Do you represent the University of Minnesota in your being here?
No, I represent stem cell researchers, and that's all I can represent.
Okay. Question. Thank you, Mr. Chair. I guess one of my questions is, you work for the University of Minnesota. I assume they're not doing any kind of embryonic stem cell research right now.
We are doing embryonic stem cell research right now, but we're not deriving new embryonic stem cells.
Okay.
So it's the derivation which results in the destruction of an embryo. But once the cell line is created, for example, the cell line may be created in Wisconsin where the original cell lines were created, they could be transferred here through MTA agreements and then research being done on embryonic stem cells that were created elsewhere.
Okay, so, Mr. Chair, Dr. Wagner, I'm trying to get this straight. It sounds like you go someplace else to get the embryonic stem cell, and then you bring it here, and you do some work on it.
That's right. So it's at the National Institutes of Health, embryonic stem cell lines are registered with the government. And so they come from different sites within the United States or from other countries. And those stem cell lines, not embryos, but existing stem cell lines, will come here so that research can be done. Because remember, that's the gold standard by which all adult stem cell therapies or studies are being compared to. So you need to have both available to you. So the prior legislation was talking about the derivation of stem cell lines. We don't derive them here, but once derived elsewhere, they do come here for such research.
So do they grow here?
Sir Hall.
I'm sorry.
The cell therapy itself are maintained here in culture.
Are they then,
Sir Hall.
Mr. Chair, Mr. Wagner, are they then killed here?
Killed?
Yeah. I mean, it's a live embryo.
There's no embryo. So just to understand is that the embryo, the inner cell mass of the embryo is which the cell line is derived from. So when you take out the inner cell mass is when you destroy the embryo. Okay?
Okay.
That's done elsewhere.
Okay.
Okay.
Got
once
it.
That cell line is passaged in culture for a period of weeks, once it's then in culture endeavor. Once we have a cell line developed, it's frozen down, and then those are distributed to places around the country, around the world, to do research. But no cell lines are being derived here, which results in a destruction of an embryo. But once the cell lines are derived elsewhere, then they're allowed to come here for the, such research.
Senator Hall, can I ask you to just pause on the discussion? We have the A4 amendment before us.
Okay.
Is there further discussion about the amendment? Senator Latz?
Yeah. Mr. Chairman, I guess I'd inquire if Dr. Wagner has seen the A4 amendment and if he may be asking kind of a legal opinion, but whether or not maybe Ms. Pontius would have some advice on whether or not the language on lines 1.9 to 1.11 would allow the university's existing stem cell research to go forward or whether it would shut it down.
Unfortunately, I don't have the bill in front of me. I've read the bill, original bill. The amended bill I've just seen briefly before sitting down here. So based on what Mr. Marty had indicated, the bill which says is written in such, the amendment is written in such a way that it states that, you know, it will allow stem cell research to be performed as long as it doesn't change the original intent of banning cloning. And that banning of human cloning is not restricted to reproductive cloning, but is also includes somatic cell nuclear transfer, which is what's in the lay area called therapeutic cloning, that would be banned, and that does interfere with stem cell research.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lantz.
Perhaps the key here is the definition on page 1 of the bill, lines 1.8 to 1.12, defining human cloning. I would suggest maybe you could unwind that impact if there were an intent to do that by simply deleting the amendment language saying unless explicitly prohibited. But I don't know if that would accomplish the purposes of allowing the therapeutic cloning to continue. But it sounds like if this amendment goes on, if this bill passes as such, it would essentially shut down the University of Minnesota stem cell research.
It will.
Any further
all the medical advances that would come from it.
Senator Latz, are you asking for counsel to weigh in on any definition?
Yes.
Okay. Perhaps you may want to repeat your question for counsel.
Sure.
Unless you're ready for it.
Mr. Chairman, I think I'm following it.
All right.
My understanding is that it wouldn't, to the extent the stem cells were coming from another location into Minnesota, it would not affect that.
It will.
But because the cloning would take someplace somewhere else.
Well, currently, that's true.
Dr. Wagner.
But it would prevent the cloning from taking place.
But the new amendment would prevent
Dr. Wagner.
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I think the problem probably is if you look on the prohibition, it also talks about shipping or receiving, although that's for the purpose of human cloning.
Which is... Mr. Chair.
Senator Latz.
For the purpose of human cloning, which human cloning is earlier defined as the therapeutic cloning that Dr. Wagner was referring to. So it sounds like the definition is written so broadly as to encapsulate therapeutic cloning, and that even this amendment would not have the impact, at least I'd be most comfortable with, and in effect would cause... It would cause the shutdown of the University of Minnesota stem cell research and their institute, which, by the way, is internationally renowned, and which is creating medical breakthroughs that will save lives. And a part of this, we're getting into what is the definition of a human life, too. I mean, we can't avoid that. There are those who would say that an embryo in its earliest stages is not human life. That seems to be the premise upon which the MCCL is approaching this bill in the first place.
I would really like to keep our discussion focused on the A4 amendment. We keep going back to the original bill, And Senator Marty, do you have any comment on
Mr.
that?
Mr. Chairman, yeah, I would like to. I don't know that it solves it, but from my perspective, makes it better chance of being. That way would be on lines 10 and 11 of the A4 amendment to delete the words unless explicitly prohibited.
Senator Marty moves to strike the words on page 1, line 10, after the word research, or is there a comma? After the comma, unless explicitly, and then the remainder of line 11 to be stricken from the amendment. Any discussion on that?
Mr. Chair.
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, I would oppose the amendment.
Oppose it. Senator Newman.
Yeah, if I could inquire, thank you, Mr. Chair, Ms. Pontius, directing your attention to line 1.10, unless explicitly prohibited, where is the stem cell research that we are discussing? Where is it expressly or explicitly prohibited?
I've been back here for the discussion.
Senator Pontius? Ms. Pontius.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Newman, I think the concern is somewhat circling that if you go back to the first part of the bill, it seems like it's almost there's a concern that that, in fact, is prohibiting it there. I think that's the concern. But Mr. Backus can weigh in, too.
Mr. Backus?
Mr. Chair, members, I don't have anything particularly to add except, yes, I think it's all comes down to the definitions being used and then the prohibitions. And the argument would be that that's where it would be explicitly prohibited, I believe.
Mr. Hoffman, on the amendment?
On Senator Marty's amendment, or
on Senator Marty's amendment.
No, I have nothing on Senator Marty's.
Any
amendment.
Further discussion on Senator Marty's amendment? It's an amendment to the Senator Marty's amendment to the amendment. All those in favor, say aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment or the amendment does not pass. The A4 amendment is before us. Further discussion?
Mr. Chairman?
Senator Schein.
Mr. Chairman, I don't know. I assume this was discussed in Health and Human Services, and I'm not even sure that I'm looking up at the definition of human cloning on page 1. It's parens B. And I'm wondering if the doctor could tell us, perhaps, is that where the trouble comes for stem cell research? Is it have to do with introducing nuclear material from one or more human somatic cells, so from one somatic cell into a fertilized or unfertilized, and I don't even know how you say that word. Is it oocyte? Is that where the trouble comes?
May I answer?
Dr. Wagner.
The response to your question, it's not so much that the definition of human cloning is an issue. The definition of human cloning is indeed correct. However, where we get into the dilemma is what the intent is of that resultant embryo. Is the intent to reproduce yourself and place that embryo into a primed uterus, which we all agree should not be done? Or is the intent to make an embryonic stem cell line for a patient-specific therapy to treat by stem cells in the future?
Then,
Senator Scheid.
Thank you. Mr. Chairman, if I might ask Senator Fischbach, is that your intent to include what the doctor is saying?
Senator Fischbach.
Mr. Chair, Senator Scheid, if the intent is to the intent of the bill is to ban human cloning, I think what the doctor was describing in very scientific terms was either you clone a human to make a baby and implant it into a woman, or you clone a baby to use it for experiments. And so, I mean, I think what we're trying to do here is prevent life from being created for the use of experiments and for reproductive cloning. I guess if that's what I was hearing the doctor say, if I was understanding what the doctor was saying correctly.
Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate
it. Mr. Chairman, if I might ask the doctor, I mean, were you talking about I didn't hear you suggesting that it was okay to create a baby to do experiments.
But the,
no, and we agree. None of us are creating a baby. But I guess where the terms are important is that once you insert a nucleus into that oocyte and you create an embryo, the intent is not to create a baby. The intent is to create an embryonic stem cell line. However, in what was just stated, the word embryo wasn't used, but rather a baby was used. So I think it comes back down to the status of what you believe the embryo to be. But we're talking about the eight-cell stage.
Thank you.
All right, thank you. Doctor, I know you're not familiar with the discussion pattern here, but you have to make your comments through the chair.
Oh, I'm sorry.
And we do that to keep record of who's talking for the tape purposes. Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair, I'm going to hold my comments because I think mine is more to the overall bill.
Senator Hall, to the amendment.
Mine probably is, too.
Any further discussion? Senator Hall.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wagner, maybe Hoffman. You can... Sorry.
Oh, it was my fault. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Is the U of M currently doing any therapeutic cloning?
Dr. Wagner.
Yeah. Thank you. The answer is no.
Senator Hall.
Dr. Wagner, but if I can have it straight, they are using what other states or countries are destroying or growing embryonic stem cells, and then they're not killing the stem cell, but the other countries or states are, and then they give you the material so that you can research it.
Dr. Wagner?
Yes, the answer to your question is that we do not derive the embryonic stem cell line, and since we don't derive the embryonic stem cell line, we have not destroyed an embryo.
Right.
However, we do accept embryonic stem cell lines created elsewhere for stem cell research at this institution.
On the amendment, further discussion? All those in favor, say aye.
Aye. Aye. Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Amendment is adopted. Further discussion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair, and Dr. Wagner, and perhaps even Senator Fischbach or Ms. Rao. When we're dealing with the issue of somatic cell or therapeutic cloning, in terms of research, I've been trying to think of how do we talk about it, but I think there's a big issue in terms of how people perceive it, whether or not that's some kind of a general therapy in terms of I don't even know how to put it medically. What actually you're getting from that cell transfer, or are we then, drawing a line and saying, or are we trying to grow new tissue? So say somebody has a damaged heart. Is that cell transfer causing somebody to grow literally a new heart or parts of the heart? And I think that's what the public has some perception problems with. So I think that's an issue we need to talk about is what kind of therapies are we doing? Are we trying to grow new body parts with some of this therapy? And I think that's what we need to know to understand the ramifications of what we're talking about.
Dr. Wagner.
So you're getting at a very important point, whereas first off, when we talk about somatic cell nuclear transfer or therapeutic cloning, what we do, for example, is you have a heart attack and you have a damaged heart muscle that could potentially benefit from these stem cell therapies. If I use someone else's stem cells, your body will immunologically attack it and remove those cells. It's doing what it's supposed to. It's a foreign tissue. However, the potential benefit of therapeutic cloning is that we take your skin cell, insert the nucleus into an oocyte, create an embryonic stem cell line as a result of that embryo that is generated, but it becomes patient-specific. It has your tissue type on the cells that are generated. So what we do with that embryonic stem cell line, we have the capacity of making liver cells, we have the capacity of making heart cells, or the capacity of making skin cells. But in this particular case, you need heart muscle cells. So we will make heart muscle cells that is patient-specific. It is your HLA type on it. So therefore, your body won't reject it. That's the benefit of somatic cell nuclear transfer. And that's what we're trying to accomplish. Has it happened today? No. But that's the real benefit of what we're talking about when we talk about, quote, therapeutic cloning.
Mr. Chair.
Further discussion, Senator Jungbauer.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and Dr. Wagner. So then again, to further go there, when you do that, what we need to know and what the general public wants to know is, in the matter, the course of doing that, by doing that injection, can that create a human life? Or is it only creating cells that can be reused?
Dr. Wagner.
The result of putting your nucleus into that oocyte will result in an embryo. And that embryo is then destroyed as a result of the manufacture of an embryonic stem cell line.
Thank you.
Ms. Rao, did you have any comments?
If I could, Mr. Chair and members of the committee, I guess I have a few comments just from some of the things that I've heard. And as the doctor stated, and it has been my understanding, this kind of therapeutic benefit that he is describing related to SCNT, which is the scientific term for cloning, has not been successful yet. Nobody has been able to do this. It's theoretical at this point in time. And I mentioned earlier about Dr. Wilmot, who is the one that had cloned Dolly the sheep, and specified that he has turned against cloning. And it was brought up later that perhaps he was just against reproductive cloning. And the articles that I have read and what I have heard, I guess, contradicts that, certainly to some extent, if not to a large extent. And Dr. Wilmot has said the odds are that by the time we make nuclear transfer work in humans, direct reprogramming will work too. And Dr. Wilmot is suggesting that he is turning against human cloning because there are other ways to do this same kind of therapy that the doctor was just talking about. For example, there's a procedure called IPS. It's induced pluripotent cells. And it's, I know, very technical, but it's instead of creating a new embryo, it's taking an adult cell, reprogramming it back to an embryonic-like stage so that then it can then be grown into the various tissues. So as Senator Jungbauer, for example, we could take one of your skin cells, and maybe skin cells don't work. I'm not the researcher, but I've done a fair amount of reading. But the idea is that we would take one of your adult cells and reprogram it back and then turn it into heart tissue or whatever it is tissue that you need. Again, it would be a match for you genetically. And so there are other ways of accomplishing the same kind of research and fantastic therapies that are theoretical without actually creating new embryos and thus destroying human life. And we think that is a better direction for the state of Minnesota to be going. Also, there was a comment about researcher Jansch, and the same comment was made that he was simply turning against cloning for reproductive purposes. And he was this researcher who is actually a very well known for previously doing human cloning research. He's a professor at MIT. And he was quoted just earlier this month stating, 10 years ago, we talked about the potential of nuclear transfer for therapy, but it turns out the technique was of no practical relevance. You would never do it in humans for a number of reasons. So these leading scientists and researchers are turning against human cloning, and they're turning towards other ideas that seem to have more promise and don't have the ethical dilemmas that we have with human cloning or somatic cell nuclear transfer, SCNT, whatever you would like to call it. Thank you.
on the amendment or on the bill before us. Senator Letts?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Dr. Wagner, lines, do you have the bill in front of you?
Sure.
Lines 1.19 and 1.20 prohibit receiving for any purpose any product derived from an embryo produced by human cloning, the method described earlier. Would that prohibit you from importing stem cell lines derived from human embryonic stem cells, like from Wisconsin that you're talking about?
Dr. Wagner.
It would, if, as I understand it, it would prevent us from receiving any stem cell lines from any other place outside the state if they were manufactured from an embryo that resulted from somatic cell nuclear transfer. As far as I understand the language, it would not interfere with our ability to take an embryonic stem cell line that was manufactured from a discarded embryo after in vitro fertilization. So, and my point is that it would restrict certain cell lines, but not all.
So, Mr. Chairman?
Sure, that.
Maybe I'll ask the broader question, Doctor. If this bill were to become law, what would be the broader impact on the university's Stem Cell Institute and its research?
Dr. Wagner?
It would limit our ability to make patient-specific stem cells.
Any other impact, Mr. Chairman?
Senator Lapps.
Yes, it would impact our ability to bring in stem cell lines that were manufactured elsewhere that may have important implications on industry development as well as the development of new therapies.
So, Mr. Chairman.
Senator Lance.
So beyond just the question of patient-specific therapies, it would have a broader impact on other research involving stem cells, right? Dr. Wagner, do you have any idea how many jobs would be eliminated as a result of that?
Dr. Wagner.
I don't know. It would have an impact, but I don't know the impact.
Mr. Chairman, Dr. Wagner, I would assume it would also have an impact on research grants as well.
Dr. Wagner.
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. To that note, to Senator Latz's note, have you at the university been doing the science that Ms. Bauer just talked about? And I'd like to hear some comments with regards to her comments about the other scientists saying that we need to be moving in a different direction.
Yes, I mean, that's an important... Oh,
Dr. Wagner.
That's an important point. It is indeed true that there is a substantial amount of research ongoing at the University of Minnesota and elsewhere around the world on this new methodology of induced pluripotential stem cells. This is where we take a piece of your, one of your tissues, a skin cell, for example, and reprogram it to become an embryonic stem cell-like line. Now, as a person who is interested in developing new therapies for patients, let me also be unequivocally clear that this new approach is going to be extraordinarily difficult to move forward in the treatment of patients because it requires the induction or the introduction of multiple genes, in some cases cancer-causing genes, to affect that cell line development. So you just have to keep that clear that, yes, we in a Petri dish can make an induced pluripotential stem cell line that has the capacity of making heart muscle that could be your heart muscle. But the problem is that to create that new reprogramming, it requires the introduction of various genes which have other deleterious effects. So for me to do use those cell lines in the study of new treatments, you know, we're in, the problem is that being I will it will be a long time before I figure out how to use those in the treatment of a human being because of the introduction of those reprogramming elements that are cancer-causing themselves. I've worked with the FDA on this issue. There are a considerable amount of work being done to see if we can overcome this strategy. Of course, if we could come up with strategies that allowed us to develop these embryonic like stem cell lines, without the issue of embryos, that would certainly be the way it would be easier for all of us. But on the other hand, that technology does not yet exist. And just know, even with induced pluripotential stem cells, which I do, you know, I can tell you that it's not something that's going to be easily translated into a human therapy.
Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wagner, will this bill affect anything that you're currently doing, or are you concerned about what you might do in the future?
Dr. Wagner.
Important point. What it does is it restricts our ability to the research that we think is important. But would it impact me today? No.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Dr. Wagner. Going off of her question, first off, how many years have you been studying or doing studies at the University of Minnesota on stem cell lines?
So the first stem cell lines were developed in 1998, so it had been probably around 2000.
Okay. Follow up?
Senator Hall, on the bill.
Okay. And on that, then, my question is, what I keep hearing from you is potential. And I think that's what Senator Hoffman was talking about. So we don't see any results necessarily, but we see a lot of potential in it. In that many years away. My last question.
Yeah, Dr. Wagner.
An important point. We hear lots about adult stem cells or umbilical cord blood stem cells, as well as the induced pluripotential stem cells and embryonic stem cell lines. They all have substantial potential. Only in the context of repairing bone marrow, that is a classic bone marrow transplant that was done here first in 1968, that is the only proven use of stem cells today. Okay. But there are new therapies that are being studied using various types of stem cells, and that what we're trying to do is to keep our options open so that we can figure out what's the best for a particular disease. So, for example, an adult stem cell may be perfectly good for the treatment of, let's say, heart disease. But we may need to have an embryonic stem cell line for diabetes, for example. And, in fact, there's some suggestion that that may be indeed the case. But From a scientific point of view, and as a doctor that takes care of these patients with incurable diseases, all I'm trying to do is to keep my options open so I can find the best therapy for the patient that I take care of. That's my only intent, and I don't care which stem cell does it.
Right. Thank you.
Senator Jungbauer.
Mr. Chair and Dr. Wagner, I know about 5 years ago, I think I lose track of time as I get older, I wrote a white paper on the error rate in cloning, and it seems that if science hasn't come a long way in the last several years, that since the error rate, I'm assuming, is still pretty high in cloning, that you'd be better off doing research with clean, non-cloned lines of stem cells. Is that still pretty accurate in terms of what you might get better results from?
Dr. Wagner?
I'm not exactly sure what you mean by error rate.
Mr. Chair, Dr. Wagner.
Senator Jungbauer on the bill.
I think it gets to the bill because I think error rates, meaning that when you clone something, it doesn't the cells don't have the same messaging to produce the way they do under normal life circumstances. So they don't come out the same. Dolly the sheep didn't come out the same as the original Dolly the sheep. I guess what I'm referring to is if there's still error rates in cloning, which I'm pretty sure there is, and I'd be happy to make that white paper available to people if I can still find it. I don't think the bill affects you as much as you think, because if we're cloning something to get cells, I don't think you're getting as clean a research or as clean a product as what we should really be getting to do our research with.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Chair.
Senator Lapps.
Is there a fiscal note on this bill? It creates a new crime.
Senator Latz, I believe the violation is a misdemeanor, and that would not trigger a fiscal note to the state.
Mr. Chairman, there are certainly the State Attorney General's office handles many criminal appeals in Minnesota, and there's a specific severability clause in the proposed legislation anticipating constitutional challenges, I would fully expect. There'd be a fiscal cost, at least to the Attorney General's office. or is there any other fiscal note that accompanies this bill?
Ms. Pontius, do you have any comment in regard to severability on this bill regarding the issue that Senator Lotz just raised?
Mr. Chairman, I understand his question was more in the context of a potential constitutional challenge rather than the substance of the
Mr. Chairman, my question's in several fold. One is, what impact, if any, would it have on the Attorney General's office that would defend the state against any constitutional challenges to the new law? Second, what, if any, impact would it have with regard to our court system that would have to absorb any additional criminal charges that were brought, misdemeanor or otherwise?
Senator Lotz, I believe there's a default severability clause that already exists in Minnesota. Would that cover the question?
Yeah. Well, Mr. Chairman, yes, there is one in Minnesota statutes. This is a little more detailed than what's in Chapter 645. I think whenever the constitutionality of a statute is challenged, like in the declaratory judgment action, the AG has to be notified. They don't have to become a party unless the state itself was already a party for some other reason.
So. Mr. Chairman, what about the courts?
Would you be more specific, Senator?
This bill proposes to create a new crime that could result in additional criminal cases being brought in the state court system. Have we sought and received a fiscal note from the court system?
Let's ask our fiscal analyst, Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Lotz, to the best of my knowledge, no fiscal note has been requested yet.
Senator Lotz.
Mr. Chairman, I seem to recall some concern being expressed earlier in the session by the chairman about any new crimes or increases in criminal levels that could have an impact on the caseload of the judiciary. Therefore, on the fiscal aspects of the judicial system. And it seems to me we at least ought to have a fiscal note from the judiciary assessing or evaluating this proposed legislation and its effect on them.
Senator Ingebrigtsen, did you want to weigh in on this?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. No, my only comment was is generally when there's a misdemeanor violation, it doesn't require, not that it doesn't require, but this certainly is going to take some judiciary time, no doubt, but certainly not any jail time, I'm assuming. I think significance enough for that. So.
Mr. Chairman, on that point, I think that might depend on which prosecutor and which judge you appear in front of on this kind of a crime. Senator Ingebrigtsen, as to whether or not jail time would result. But just as a matter of procedure, it seems to me it's most appropriate to ask the courts to evaluate this. And if it comes back that they think there's no fiscal note, and I would similarly inquire as the Attorney General's office, and fiscal notes also have provisions for local fiscal impact. Certainly prosecutors at the local level, the county and city levels, could be affected by this. Local jails could be affected as well. I think as a budget committee, we've got an obligation, especially in these tight fiscal times, to evaluate that potential impact.
All right. Thank you for your comments, Senator Lotz. The bill is before us. Senator Newman moves. Recommend Senate file number 695 as amended be recommended to pass and be moved to Higher Education Committee.
Mr. Chairman.
Any further discussion, Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, on that point, again, I do not support human cloning, but I think the vote against the amendment I offered spells out what's happening here. This will restrict scientific stem cell research, and I think that it's a question if the committee chooses to do that, that's one thing, but we shouldn't pretend that this is about cloning. Nobody is proposing to do cloning. I asked that question the other night, and nobody that we know of is proposing to do it, and I don't mind saying again that we don't support human cloning if you want to make it illegal, but But here we're trying to stop stem cell research. We are going to restrict stem cell research. It can have MCCL say, well, we know some doctors say these other lines types of research are more promising, but the bottom line is this will restrict some of the best research in the world for people who have ALS or Alzheimer's or Parkinson's and other incurable diseases. And I think it's worth not blocking those efforts. But I don't think we should hide behind the fact that we're going to try and prevent people from cloning human beings and making identical people. That's not what this issue is about. This is going to restrict the research that is happening and continues to happen and will evolve along things at the University of Minnesota.
The motion is before us. Senate File 695 be recommended to pass by Senator Newman as amended. All those in favor say aye.
Roll call, please, Mr. Chairman.
Roll call has been requested.
Mr. Chairman, could it be put in the journal? I think you need three of us to raise our hands.
Are there three hands? Seeing three hands, it'll be recorded in the journal. Will the CA read the roster?
Senator Thompson?
Yes.
Senator Hall?
Yes.
Senator Goodwin?
No.
Senator Marty?
No.
Senator Jungbauer?
Yes.
Senator Ortman?
Yes.
Senator Latz?
No.
Senator Newman?
Yes.
Senator Limmer?
Yes.
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
Yes.
Senator Hoffman?
Yes.
Senator Scheid?
No.
Senator Harrington?
No.
Motion passes 8-5. Motion prevails.
Thank you very much.
Thank you, Senator Fischbach. Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Latz.
Before we proceed with the next bill, may I inquire as to whether or not there's any fiscal aspect to Senator Ingebrigtsen's bill? And we are now at the end of the second hearing since the, or getting close to the end of the second hearing since the majority introduced their budget. We don't yet have a budget, and we have spent no time evaluating any proposed majority's budget. It'll leave us with 2 days, 3 hours to evaluate the entire committee's budget after this hearing.
Senator Latz,
another hour on a non-fiscal bill.
Senator Latz, we're going to be unveiling a budget, and you will have over a week to make that analysis on the budget and participate in it. So I don't think you'll have too much concern for today. Senator Ingebrigtsen, welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members. Bring before you Senate File 675. It's a technical bill from the DNR. And we may as well start out by saying there is no fiscal impact on this bill through our fiscal analysis.
Are you sure, Senator Ingebrigtsen?
I think that's included in your packet, yes.
Okay.
Senate File 675 is a bill that first came to my committee, and we were directed to come to your committee. What it does, basically, and before we move any further, I guess we do have an A1 amendment I'd like to offer. It's a technical amendment with regards to the effective date.
As we're waiting for the A1 to be distributed, or do we have it in our, no, it's being distributed. Why don't you describe the amendment as it's being passed?
The amendment actually, Mr. Chair, is the effective date. The section is effective July 1, 2011. Yeah, that's reflected on two lines, page 1 after line 16. Pretty straightforward.
We'll wait a little bit so everyone can have
sure.
That in front of them. Senator Jungbauer, do you have
Mr. Chair, comment? I just wanted to mention that our Senate Republican research analysis states clearly the fiscal impact is unknown, just so there's no question in what we have in terms of our handouts. I don't want that to get out, you know, without people knowing that. See,
Mr. Chairman, to that point.
Senator Latz.
Mr. Chairman, has there been a fiscal impact statement requested?
Senator Ingebrigtsen?
On this bill?
No, there was not. In talking to the fiscal analyst who's raising his hand right now, maybe he can address that. But we did talk about it in our committee, and it was learned at that time that there was no fiscal impact. So.
Senator Turner?
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, I talked to the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension, and they said that this would cost them nothing, and they said that they concurred with the policy provisions of the bill too.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion for the A1 amendment. Any further discussion? All those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Amendment is adopted.
In the interest of, thank you, Mr. Chair, in the interest of brevity, I think what we'll do is I'll turn it over to the gentleman from the DNR. He can explain it real quickly what it is, and I think you also have a fact sheet in your packet, and we'll turn it over to them. Thank you.
All right. Thank you. Welcome to the committee. Would you identify yourself for the record?
Thank you, Mr. Chair. For the record, Major Rodman Smith, Operations Manager of DNR Enforcement. Senator, members, before you is Senate File 675, and there's basically two parts. Part one, or Section one, is clarifies that the Department of Natural Resources is a law enforcement agency and can participate in the Bureau of Criminal Apprehension's comprehensive incident-based reporting systems, otherwise known as CYBERS. Just a little bit of history on that. When it was first created and the statute was written on line 1112, it had Minnesota Municipal Police Departments. It talked about sheriff's offices and the Minnesota State Patrol. And over the years, different agencies like the DNR have come back, like the Minnesota Airports Police, University of Minnesota Police, who don't fit one of those three original definitions, have come back and asked to be able to join this process, and that's what we're doing here today. As Mr. Turner mentioned, the BCA, we have been in contact with them, and they do approve of us joining this. So that is Section 1 of the bill. Section 2 deals with silencers and the use of them for wildlife and disease control. About 5 years ago, DNR was granted the opportunity to use silencer with a sunset date of July 1st of 2011. And we have been using silencers through contract vendors, primarily the USDA APHIS, or Animal Plant Health Inspection Services, Wildlife Services Division, to use for the depopulation of wildlife and infected species. Some examples would be there's a large cormorant depopulation going on in the Leech Lake that we work closely with the Leech Lake Band of Ojibwe on, where they use silencers to depopulate the cormorant population. And currently, USDA, we have contract with USDA APHIS Wildlife Services to help us reach our targets for surveillance in the chronic wasting disease area down in southeastern Minnesota, where we are looking for 900 samples to test to see if we have chronic wasting disease. And that's what this allows us to do, and we don't own any silencers. The DNR doesn't own any silencers. We do all this through contracting. So lines 213 to 216 basically remove some confusion, because we are strictly going with contracts with this, that through our contractors we're not limited to 10, because we have used them in the northwest, up in the TB area, where we've had bovine tuberculosis, down in the southeast, up in the Leech Lake area, and we just want to make it clear that we're not limited to 10 through our contractors. Right. And that's basically the bill, and I can stand for questions.
Any questions? Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. What are you saying, that you hire contractors to do the, what do you call it? Yeah, I know, shooting. That's good, though.
Eradication.
What?
Eradication.
Eradication, okay. Okay, so you hire contract. Who are these contractors?
Officer
Mr. Chair, Senator Goodwin, we hire the USDA has a division called Animal Plant Health Inspection Service. And part of that APHIS is what's called Wildlife Services. They're federal employees, and we contract with that federal agency to go and do the depopulation, eradication, or whatever you want to talk about it, for those animals. So we're actually contracting with a subset of the USDA. So it's not Joe's shoot 'em up that we find in the Yellow Pages. It's a government agency that we contract with.
Any further discussion? Yes, Senator Harrington.
Mr. Chair, Major, I did have one concern. I think you've already answered the primary one, which was that it was not essentially a community service officer type as designated under 84.035 in the statute that was actually using the silencers. As a ex-St. Paul PD guy, we've had silencers used for tactical purposes for as long as I can think of, but we've always maintained control of them through in the hands of law enforcement that are certified and sworn police officers. So I just wanted to make sure that was the contractors you're working with are, in fact, federal law enforcement, effectively.
Officer Smith.
Mr. Chair, Senator Harrington, I don't believe that the federal employees are licensed peace officers under the state of Minnesota. They're federal employees through APHIS that I don't believe are actually law enforcement officers. We don't own any of the silencers or the suppressed equipment. The DNR doesn't own any of them. That's why we contract through these folks to do this work. So to your specific question, the contractors we use, I do not believe that they are licensed peace officers.
Follow up? Do you know what the qualifications are for them then? What the qualifications that the federal government uses for them? Are they essentially national park folks, or what organization are they tied to?
Officer Smith.
Mr. Chair, if I could bring up Mike Don Carlos. He's the assistant director of Fish and Wildlife for DNR. He might be able to answer this for us.
Mr. Don Carlos.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, Mike Don Carlos, acting deputy director of Fish and Wildlife DNR. And Mr. Chairman and members, I can partially answer the question. The agency we work with is Wildlife Services, and these are full-time, mostly federal employees who their specific job is wildlife control. And they use firearms on a regular basis. As a federal agency, they're subject to all manner of oversight and authorization, but I can't speak to that specifically today or in detail. When we do a contract with them, the contract is authorized for a particular period of time, and we allow the use of suppressed firearms that they provide and they control. So our staff doesn't have access to this equipment at all. It's only during the contract periods, and it's done by federal employees.
Okay. Thank you. I will just, in closing comment, that I do support this. St. Paul PD has used these tools for a number of years for tactical purposes, and we have also been called in to assist with deer eradication down in Crosby Park, to assist DNR in the past. This is a very good use for the suppressed tools, and my only concern was who controlled them and the qualifications of who would have their hands on them. So thank you very much.
Senator Marty.
Mr. Chair, I'm sorry, I missed the beginning of the presentation. I carried the bill that allowed the silencers. I think we were trying to get rid of cormorants in one situation. I just wonder about it was written very tightly at the time, and I understand that the sunset has to be taken care of, and I don't know how many you want to have, but the one I have a question about is to keep direct custody and control of the devices when they're not specifically authorized for use. I think the state has had the ban on silencers has been very strict because of obvious potential for criminal use of them and so on. Obviously, your written policies could govern the use, possession, and transportation of the devices. Eliminating that third bullet right now, I presume the new restrictions are going to be carefully controlling who has them when they're not being used.
Senator Ingebrigtsen.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And Senator Marty, I think what I can do here is turn it over to Mr. Don Carlos. I think he'll tell you that these people have been this service has been utilized for many, many years, and maybe you can comment on that, and I think that'll give you a little reassurance of how successful the report, or excuse me, how successful the process has worked.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Marty.
Mr. Don Carls.
The DNR has no intention of requiring suppressed firearms for our own use. The contract arrangements which we've used case by case with Wildlife Services have been, for a whole variety of reasons, clearly the best way to go. So that's why we're looking to remove that language. It just doesn't apply. And I, in the near future, I cannot foresee a situation in which we would acquire that equipment and maintain it.
So,
Senator Marty?
Mr. Chairman, in effect, worrying about the, because the department is not planning to have any, that you're going to continue contracting with the same folks. And okay.
Any further discussion, Senator Goodwin?
Oh, just one quick question. But what we're doing by removing this language, it appears, and the expiration date is saying that you really, you've got the authority then under this to have your own silencers, to do your own shooting. You wouldn't have to contract, so it wouldn't have to continue the way it is. This would just make current law on silencers be permanent instead of temporary, and you wouldn't have any limit to the number, and you wouldn't have any you wouldn't have to keep direct custody and control of the devices when they're not used. So this is permissive. This is making it from a limited language to permissive language. Has nothing to do with whether or not you use a contractor. Correct?
Does that sound fair?
Mr. Don Collins.
Mr. Chairman and members, I think that's correct. However, when I read the stricken language right now, it's not clear if it that it might be interpreted to apply to these devices that we're authorizing the use of. And so, you know, we don't control the storage and the possession and et cetera of federal agencies' materials. And so I think that was our intent, enforcement's intent in striking the language. Because we don't have intentions to keep them ourselves, we really can't exercise that responsibility with contractors.
But, Mr. Chair, but this language would now allow you to. It would allow the department to. The way this language would be written now, without an expiration date, it would allow the department to do pretty much anything they wanted with a silencer issue. Correct? In the future. I don't mean under you or whatever, but I mean in the future.
Mr. Darncoe.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin, yes, I would agree with that. It would the language would be established and enforce a written policy governing the use and possession. So it would be more permissive than this language should we decide to, in the future, to acquire that equipment, which, as I testified a minute ago, at this point we have no intentions of doing.
All right.
Thank you.
Further discussion? Senator Ingebrigtsen renews his motion. Recommending Senate file number 675 as amended be recommended to pass and go
directly
to the floor.
Yes, that's correct.
All those in favor say aye.
Aye. Aye.
Opposed? Motion prevails.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, Senator Ingebrigtsen.
I'm just saying, I want what the doctors are doing the research.
But we're not done, huh?
I don't think so.
We're going to do this in 5 minutes. Okay, good.
For the record, we'll be passing out spreadsheets on the budget proposal. Hopefully, everyone will get a copy of it. We'll be introducing it orally before the committee. We are not accepting public testimony at this time. We are reserving next week for that, the meeting's scheduled. for Tuesdays and Thursday, and perhaps even more time than that. At this time, I'm going to ask Mr. Turner, our fiscal analyst, to describe the bill. And what I'd like to do is make an opening comment, if I can. This particular budget really reflects the nature of our budget challenges this coming year. Comments that I made, and I know that many members of the legislature agree, that we are at a time when we have to face severe budget constraint, and as a result of that constraint, we must focus to be responsible to our public on core essential function of government. Department of Public Safety, corrections, as well as the courts are definitely the core function elements, one area of the core function of government outlined in our state constitution, and we're reflecting that in this particular budget. Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, members, thank you. A few opening words. The division's general fund base is $1,782,650,000. The governor's recommendation came in at $38.9 million over that base. The Senate division target was $10 million over the base. So the difference between the governor's position and the Senate position in this document is $28.9 million. As you can see, I have agency and program on the left hand. We have fiscal year 10 and 11 for comparative purposes is the next column. Then we have the governor's recommendation and then the chairman's recommendation and finally the chairman's tails. To start out, the first agency on the list is the Supreme Court. It has two programs, Supreme Court Operations and Civil Legal Services. The first program on line three is Supreme Court Operations. It has a base of $60.7 million. The governor recommended an increase of $489,000. This was the court request, which would fund health insurance increases only. No salary increases are included in that number. Chairman Limmer concurred with that recommendation at $489,000. Next, we move to civil legal services. It has a base of $23.6 million. The governor recommended base funding. Chairman Limmer is recommending a $1.5 million cut for the biennium. Move to Court of Appeals on line 20, base funding of $20.1 million. The governor recommended an increase of $198,000. The chairman concurred. Once again, that was the court request, the court hold harmless request. Move to the District Courts, line 27, $464,400,000 base. The governor recommended $6,063,000 increase for the biennium, the hold harmless request, and the chairman concurred. The guardian ad litem, we have a base of $24.7 million. The governor increased that base by $329 million. This was a hold harmless request as well. And the chairman did not concur and is providing base funding only for the guardian. We move to page two, the tax court with a $1,580,000 base. The governor recommended a $70,000 increase for the biennium, and the chair concurred. Uniform Laws Commission, $98,000 base, base funding, and the chair concurred. Board of Judicial Standards, $884,000 base. The governor recommended a $28,000 increase. The chairman did not concur, and so the Senate position has no increase, straight base funding for the board. Public Defense Board, $129.5 million base. The governor recommended an increase of $6,472,000. The chair came in with an increase as well, but only about half of the governor's increase at $3 million. The governor's increase was represented 5% of the board's base, and the chairman's increase is 2.4%. We move to the Department of Public Safety and their first division, Homeland Security and Emergency Management. We have a $3.7 million base, general fund base, for Homeland Security and Emergency Management. The governor recommended base funding, and the chairman concurred. And we concurred, the Senate also concurs with the special revenue and the environmental revenue funding in the governor's recommendation. We move on to the BCA on page 3. We have two identical non-general fund items, a state government special revenue item and a trunk highway fund item. The chair concurred with continuing that non-general fund appropriation. Then when we get to the general fund, there's an $81.1 million base for the BCA. The governor recommended base funding. The chairman recommends a $500,000 each year cut for a total cut of $1 million. That would be a reduction of 1.3 million or 1.3% of the BCA's base budget. Move on to the fire marshal. This is a non-general fund item. Fire marshal is funded by special revenue from the fire safety account. And the governor recommended straight base funding. As you know, and we've spoken, that account, the fire safety account, brings in approximately $12 million more each year than it's spent. And so in order to help balance our budget, the governor did not touch that surplus money. The chairman is recommending that we capture $8.5 million from the fire safety account and apply it on the bottom line. It would have the same effect as a general fund cut. The chairman, however, does not recommend that we continue that practice. It does not have tails. It will be up to the next legislature to determine what to do with that fund in 14 and 15. Then we have gambling enforcement. We have the special revenue. We agree with the governor on the special revenue appropriation. That's a general fund transfer from the alcohol enforcement account. Then the general fund, the governor recommends base budget, and the chairman concurs. Then we move to the Office of Justice Programs. It has a general fund base budget of $68.6 million. The governor had one request. It was $2.9 million for Network for Better Futures. The chairman does not fund this project and, in addition, makes further cuts from the Office of Justice Programs, a very small cut to crime victim reparations, which has a $5.5 million base. The chairman recommends a $59,000 cut there. And then the chairman recommends the elimination of the justice grants, their entire base in the budget, and that comes to $3,196,000 for the biennium.
Quick question, Mr. Chair. Is that domestic violence grants?
Senator Goodwin?
Are those?
Would you mind if we hold questions until after? We've only
okay, thank
a couple
you.
More pages to go. And I'll call on you, Mr. Turner.
All right, Mr. Chairman, I'm moving along. We're on page 4. One last program within the Department of Public Safety, Emergency Communication Networks. There was one decision item. The governor recommended $6.8 million in additional operations and maintenance costs for the armor public radio system, and the chairman concurs. We move on to the post board, another special revenue agency. The governor recommended a total cut of $400,000, a 5% operations reduction, a 5% training reduction to the post board. The chairman did not concur and funds the post board at base level. Private detective board, $240,000, governor base level, chairman concurs at base level. Then we move on to the Human Rights Department. It has a $6.7 million base budget. The governor funds the department at base level funding. The chairman funds it with a 50% reduction, a $3.3 million cut, and for a total human rights appropriation of $3,340,000. Moving on to the Department of Corrections, page 5. First, the institutions. The first governor's change item is on line 149, $26.9 million to fund core prison operations. That's the $26.9 million tail problem from the last biennium. That was included in the governor's budget, and the chair concurs and fully funds that deficit. Next item on 150, to maintain the favorable chemical dependency treatment beds at 180. A federal grant is expiring in December of this year. It funds 90 of those 180 beds. The governor is requesting $1.3 million to continue funding those 9 beds. The chairman does not concur and does not fund that project. Then there's a governor's recommendation of $800,000, $800,000 cut representing 5 FTEs throughout the institution's division, and the chair concurs. Community services, we have 5 change items. The first is within the community services department, governor's recommendation of the elimination of 4 FTEs. The chairman concurs. On line 162, we have a CCA subsidy reduction. Actually, 162 to 164 are related. The 3 supervision delivery systems, the CCA subsidy, the CPO, county probation officer reimbursement, and the DOC field services, the governor recommended cutting supervision on those 3 delivery systems by 2.5%. The chairman agrees to the governor's cut and adds an additional 1.5% for a total of a 4% reduction in the base of those 3 delivery systems. And then finally on 165, the Dodge Fillmore Olmsted Enhanced Sex Offender Programming project, the governor recommended defunding that, and the chairman concurs. In operation support, the governor recommended an additional elimination of 5 FTEs throughout the division, savings of $670,000, and the chair concurs. And finally, we have the Sentencing Guidelines Commission base budget of $1,172,000. The governor recommended base funding. The chair concurs. If we move down at the bottom part of page 6, we'll finish it off here. We list the revenue adjustments. As I noted earlier, there's $8.5 million in the fire safety account to the general fund. Then the post-board adjustment in the governor's budget, that would be $400,000 savings from the general fund. But then we have 2 that we haven't spoken about yet. The DOC, we take DOC special revenue accounts, and we transfer $800,000 from their special revenue account to the general fund. And then the MnCorps revolving fund at the Department of Corrections, we transfer, or the chairman recommends transferring $1 million from the revolving fund to the general fund. And that results in a budget that's $10 million over base, and it comes in at $1,792,650,000, Mr. Chairman. That's your budget.
Thank you, Mr. Turner. With the spreadsheet now revealed, I would like to make a few comments. This has been a very difficult year in order to determine where our budget goes. I believe it's the function of government to adequately fund core essential functions of government. I believe that in our area of funding divisions, we must adequately fund the courts, the function of law enforcement, and the function of Department of Corrections. There are a great number of other items in the bill that, quite frankly, some people are going to be disappointed with. But at the same time, we have a job to do and to preserve the law enforcement capability in our state. The Department of Corrections, that was left with a $27 million net hole in the budget that we did not have any funding for. And we needed to fill that. Otherwise, it would have dire consequences for our correction system and the running of prisons, as well as other correctional programming. needless to say, law enforcement or the public safety also, I did mention, and the court system, in my opinion, must be efficiently and adequately funded. That is the very instrument that protects our civil liberties and our civil rights. And they must be funded, and in my opinion, they were drastically cut in previous years to the point that the functionality of the court was in danger. And that's how we arrived at that. The highlights on this particular bill, although I use that euphemism guardedly, we're maintaining the core services for the courts. We are increasing public defenders' budget. And that's on the constitutionally required services that that agency and service provides. We filled the Department of Corrections hole in the Institutions Division, namely $27 million of TALES, which was not given any provision for by the last administration, as well as the last majority parties that agreed to that in the last biennium. We made no cuts to domestic abuse shelters or services, and we accepted nearly all of the governor's recommended cuts, except the post board, which trains our law enforcement personnel. I'd like to give the committee a little structure. Today I would like to limit our discussion to the items on the spreadsheet. And questions on how to read the spreadsheet. If someone has that, we can certainly satisfy that as well. Next week, on Tuesdays and Thursday, we have extended hours if needed, and we can get into the discussion and debate of the items on the spreadsheet, but we can open up the discussion for members at this time. Senator Goodwin.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. And could the council tell me what all is in the justice grants that are being eliminated?
I'm sorry, grants? Senator Goodwin. Could you repeat that?
Sorry.
Could you repeat your question?
Oh, could council tell me what's all eliminated under the justice grants? What programs are those?
Mr. Turner?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodwin.
And for the purposes of other members, could you refer to the line on the end
page? Oh, it's line 103, Mr. Chair.
All right. Thank you.
The statutory citation for the justice grants is 299A.296, and it's headed Community Crime Prevention Program and Grants. It lists a number of criteria. It says community-based grants designed to provide services for children under 14 years of age or juvenile offenders who are at risk of becoming juvenile offenders. Must be given priority to juvenile restitution, pre-arrest, probation innovation, teen courts, et cetera. That's one example. Another program criteria would be community-based programs designed to provide at-risk children and youth under 14 with after-school and summer enrichment. Another would be community-based programs to design or discourage young people from involvement in unlawful drug or street gang activities, et cetera.
Mr. Chair, sorry, sir, I can't hear you.
Okay,
you're going so fast.
I'm sorry, Mr. Chairman and Senator Goodman, I'm just giving you the statutory citation.
Oh, okay.
But if you want to, I've got a list of the funded justice programs right here in front of me.
If you could read those off, I'd appreciate it.
We have it. I'm sorry if I mispronounced this. Ainda Young, Indian Youth Services, Homeless Shelters, Cultural Enrichment.
Ms. Turner. Sarah Goodwin, we do not have the whole list. Mr. Turner does. We can provide that on Tuesday for you. It is a lengthy list, and we can get that to you before Tuesday so you can have plenty of time to study it.
Okay, Mr. Chair, could I just see if he knows the answer to two things then? Would this include the youth intervention programs, and would it include domestic violence grants?
Mr. Chairman, Senator Goodman, it does not include the youth intervention programs. That is under different statutory site. It had a $3.2 million base. Rather than pick and choose between youth intervention and community justice grants,
the chairman decided to eliminate the community justice grants because the youth intervention program, there is some overlap between the two, but the youth intervention program requires a community match, a local match.
And, Mr. Chair, what about the domestic violence?
Oh, I'm sorry. That funding is not affected by this budget for the domestic violence services or shelter.
Thank you much.
Further questions? Senator Engelbrecht.
So, thank you, Mr. Chair. To make it clear, then, on Tuesday, you'll be accepting amendments, and you think that's going to go into Thursday as
yes,
well?
Senator Ingebrigtsen will be introducing the bill on Monday. This is a preliminary. And we will be having discussion. And final action will be on Thursday. And, oh. Public reaction to the bill will be on Tuesday. Amending will be on Thursday, and final action on the bill will be on Thursday. Sir Letts.
Mr. Chairman, does public reaction include presentations from each of the agencies that are affected as to how these cuts will be impacting the agencies and their services?
We certainly can entertain those on Tuesday.
Could we please give notice, I guess, at this time that at least I would be interested in hearing from each of the agencies as to what impact the proposed cuts would have?
I believe we've heard from many of them already, Senator Ladds, but not in reaction to the bill.
That's what I mean.
We will be posting our bill on the Internet. We'll be passing it out to anyone who requests it. And anyone who wishes to give testimony on Tuesday is welcome.
I did have a question about the spreadsheet.
Oh, and if there's anyone who does want to give testimony, please contact Angela Starks, our committee administrator, before Tuesday. She's right back here. Wave your hand. All right.
I did have a question.
Yes, Senator Latz.
This line. On line 150, my understanding, is it the intent of the chairman's budget to maintain the existing treatment beds, or does this eliminate that program altogether?
Yes, Senator Latz, it's to maintain the 90 beds.
Okay. Rather than increase it to 180, which is what the department had requested, proposed. And also on line 162, the CCA subsidy reduction, what's the impact? Where does that subsidy go right now? Is that to the counties?
CCA is our community corrections systems throughout all of the counties.
So the money that is normally in this line goes from the state to the counties for the counties to provide the probation services. Is that correct?
I'm going to let Mr. Turner explain that in a little more detail. Mr. Turner.
Mr. Chairman, Senator Latz, the CCA subsidy, which I think the base on it is about $80 million for the biennium, but the 32 CCA entities receive their funding through a subsidy formula that's based on population, it's based on number of Part 1 crimes, and whatever amount of money we put into the formula, it comes out, it processes it, and it comes out with each CCA entity's amount. And so by reducing this by the CCA formula by $4 million, we're reducing the money that goes into the front end from, I guess it'd be $39 million to $35 million. And then the deductions will be taken proportionally among the CCA. Reductions will be proportionate among the CCA counties that receive the subsidy. The other two lines are counties that do not belong to the CCA program, delivery program. They're either county probation officer or DOC field offices, and they are almost exclusively smaller rural counties.
Okay, and then I had...
Senator Latz.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Then I had one other question. I can't tell you which line it was on, but did I hear you correctly that it's your budget cuts the Minnesota Department of Human Rights in half?
That's correct, Senator Latz. Line 138.
So we'll have ample time to discuss the budget at another time.
We will. We will. Further questions? Hearing none, there's no further action before the committee. Meeting adjourned.
Chris?